like he was about to lunge. "We don't have a door," he hissed. Hondo clenched his fists at his sides. "I'm going to enjoy knocking this guy's head off." Out of nowhere, the cashier appeared and threw a pot of hot frying oil on the Hondo demon's head. "Run!" I screamed at the kid. "This isn't a game!" The cashier actually smiled before he took off. The Hondo demon, on the other hand, wasn't smiling. He clawed at his melting face as chunks of his body fell to the ground, vanishing like steam. That left the three Brooks demons gripping their twins by the throats. "What's it gonna be?" Hondo said fiercely. With a thrust to a demon's gut, one of the Brookses wriggled free, but her action was soon mirrored by her twins. The first Brooks locked eyes with me. "Holy Kay, Obispo," she gasped. "You're going to stand there all night?" "It's her," I shouted to Hondo, and we charged. The demons howled, then vanished into a thin trail of black smoke. Brooks fell to her knees, grabbing her throat. "Brooks!" I hurried over. "We better get out of here before anything else goes down," Hondo said, glancing around nervously. I helped Brooks to her feet. "Why'd they give up so easily?" I asked Hondo. It didn't make sense. They'd had the numerical advantage. Probably to bring back an army? "I'm fine," Brooks said, shaking her head, but she was trembling. "I'm fine," she repeated, then crawled into the bed of the truck. I followed her, even though she said she wanted to be alone. We both lay there, not talking, just looking up at the dark sky. Hondo had us back on the highway a minute later. The world hummed by with the steady drone of the engine. I turned to face Brooks. She kept staring blankly at the stars. I didn't know what to say, but I felt like I needed to say something to bring her back from wherever she was. I picked a few nasty demon hairs out of my mouth and cleared my throat. "I think, maybe," I began, "I felt some kind of connection to something that felt like heat or the center of the earth. I can't be sure." I tried to find the right words. "Is that crazy?" My mind went through all the gods in my book. Was there a god of the earth? "It was probably just a coincidence," Brooks said sharply without looking at me. "But I could feel it in my fingertips, like I was holding on to some rope made up of heat and energy, and it felt dangerous, like I had to control it or it was going to control me." "You should have let them take me," she mumbled. "But why would they want you?" Brooks kept her eyes fixed on the sky. I sat up. "Are you listening?" "I heard you, Zane. You've got some godly power. Good for you." "Hey, you okay? You've ruined everything." She sat up and huddled against the cab. "Whoa, what are you talking about? I saved you." "Saved?" She let out an exasperated laugh, like she was offended or something. I wanted to argue, to let her know she wasn't the only one freaked out or scared or... She fidgeted with the string on her hoodie. I was too afraid to say the wrong thing, so I bit back the words and waited for the gears in her mind to stop turning. It was like she was getting up the courage to tell me something I might not want to hear. I knew if I pushed too hard, she'd never tell me anything. A few minutes later, she said, "Whenever I changed into a hawk, I could feel the sky. It was like a part of me. Even after I changed back, I could still feel it." She looked up at the stars. I wanted to claw out their eyes, but nothing worked.
"What do you mean?"
It's gone, Zane. I got an empty feeling in the pit of my stomach.
"What's gone?"
I'm not a hawk anymore.
Chapter 19.
"What? How? You're a shapeshifter. How can your power just disappear?
My pulse raced. How should I know? But it's gone, and... Try again. Maybe you were nervous or something. Brooks looked at me, her face like stone. I told you. It's gone. Brooks, what's going on with you? Why aren't you telling me? Forget I said anything. She knocked on the back window to ask Kondo to stop. When he did, we climbed into the truck's cab. Without saying anything, Brooks made it clear that I wasn't to join her in the back seat. When I first met Brooks, I thought her eyes could hide mountains. I always knew they held secrets she would never tell me. But tonight, her eyes were cold and unblinking, and they made me feel like I was walking on a crumbling stone wall. She wasn't just hiding something big. She was hiding something dark. I rested my head against the window, trying to make sense of everything. But Hondo wanted to relive his hammer slam over and over. And did you see how the claw of the hammer drove right into that monster's skull? It was a thing of beauty, Zane. A real thing of beauty. Actually, it was kind of creepy to see a hammer going into my face, or a face that looked like mine, but still. Yeah, true beauty. I thought about the shadow magic Brooks said they used to make the imitations of us. What else could shadow magic do? Hondo? I kept my eyes on the headlight beams shining across the highway. Yeah? Thanks for coming and, for spending your money and being a demon fighting tank, he chuckled. You kidding? This is a rush, kid. Better than watching any wrestling match. Even better than that time Meat Grinder stole the title from reigning Dead Thief, remember? Poor Dead Thief went to work at Home Depot after that. He shook his head, like he really felt for the guy. Who wants to be a ring rat when they can actually be in the ring? No one, that's who. He slugged me in the arm. You got guts, kid. Real guts. Did I? I didn't feel so gutsy. But wrestling's a sport, I said. It's real life, and we could actually die. I'd hate myself if anything ever happened to Hondo. Better to die a freaking warrior, he said, than a night-crawling janitor. I don't think I'd ever loved the guy more. As soon as I was asleep, I fell into a dream. I was back home, walking through the desert toward the volcano. The sky was blood red, and a hot, dry wind blew from the east. I looked down and saw that I was pushing a grocery cart, and inside was Miss Cab in her chicken form, hopping from one foot to another. What are you doing in my dream? I asked her as I pushed the cart over the bumpy earth. This is a futile effort. Are you going to yell at me again? She opened her beak, then closed it like whatever she was going to say, she'd changed her mind. I asked, how's Mr. Ortiz? She clucked, then said, these dumb chicken eyes are worthless. When I kill a pooch, you'll go back to your regular self. You must attack his blind side. The earth began to shake, and sparks flew from the volcano, launching themselves across the desert like mini fire missiles aimed at my head. A terrible rumbling sound echoed across the land, and a stream of lava burst out of the beast, racing down the mountain right toward us. Ms. Cab shook her head. Time to wake up, Zane. I spun the cart and raced away from the lava. You can't outrun it, Ms. Cab said. The earth turned to quicksand, and I began to sink along with the cart. Her beady chicken eyes narrowed. I said to wake up, Zane. I'm in no mood to be swallowed by the earth. I'm trying. And when you do, make sure to remember, I'm a chicken. She leaped onto the cart's handle and rammed her beak into my hand as the lava licked at my heels. I started to scream, but then I woke up, gripping my hand and kicking my legs. The car was parked at a lot off a two-lane highway, and Hondo was gone. Brooks was still asleep in the back seat, thank God. Catching my breath, I looked at the back of my hand. There was a small red spot in the middle of it. First, she'd screamed at me, and now she'd pecked me? definitely needed to smash that eyeball. It was barely dawn. The world was foggy and covered in gray. I yawned, stretched my arms over my head, and rubbed my eyes. Then I saw it. The beach. Right in front of me. I sat there staring at it with wide eyes, because I didn't want to forget what it was like to see the ocean for the first time, the way the white waves rushed out of the fog like they were in a hurry, or how the jagged cliffs loomed over the water like some kind of guardian. "Brooks!" I shook her. "Check it out!" She blinked awake, nodded, then closed her eyes again, like the ocean was an inconvenience. Whatever. Where were we? Out the window, a wooden sign read, Solana Beach. I reached for the road atlas, and my eyes roved over it until I saw we were in San Diego, just a couple hours south of L.A. I got down from the truck. The air was cool and wet and salty. I spotted Hondo over at a food truck on the other end of the parking lot. He waved at me, and I motioned that I was going to check out the beach. A couple surfer guys were sitting on the back bumper of their van, pulling on their wetsuits. A golden lab danced in place, whining. It made me miss Rosie even worse. I stepped onto the sand, trying to balance on my walking stick, but it was mushy and uneven, impossible to get a foothold on. The waves were only 30 or so yards away. Seeing the sea wasn't enough. I had to touch it. I kicked off my sneakers and socks. The coarse sand was chilly and damp. Sharp bits of white shell poked out. After a few steps, I realized the stick was worthless. "This is no different from balancing on the edge of the volcano," I told myself. One foot in front of the other, placing just the right amount of weight on each foot. I'd come face to face with the god of death and killed a demon runner. Surely I could walk across the sand. I was worried Hondo would call me back any second, because once he'd had his breakfast and coffee, he'd want to get on the road. But no way was I going to waste this moment. A seagull circled overhead as I took the last few steps between piles of brownish-green seaweed.
"Ha, ha, ha!"
it cried. The cold waves touched my toes, and I couldn't help but smile a huge, goofy smile. Wow! The ocean was seriously a lot bigger close up. I tossed my stick onto the beach and inched farther into the water. It was like ice, but I didn't care. I went in up to my ankles, then to my knees. My jeans were soaked and felt like they weighed 100 pounds. A small white wave rushed toward me, knocking me over. I came up laughing, shaking the water out of my hair.
"You're not what I expected," a female voice said.
"I guess I should stop here and warn you gods that you are seriously not going to like this part of the story, so prepare yourselves." I turned, peering through the morning fog, but there was no one on the shore, and I couldn't see past the waves because the mist was too thick. "Hello?" I called out. No answer. "Anyone there?" I shuffled backward toward the shore, shivering. I suddenly felt like I was being watched. A tingle ran through me, and I didn't know if it was because I was freezing or something else. Maybe I'd imagined the voice. Yeah, I know, but a guy can hope, can't he? Grabbing my stick, I dragged it through the thick, wet sand. Zane was here. Then came the weird thing. In the empty space next to my name, new letters materialized slowly, as if invisible fingers were writing in the sand. "Look." "What the?" I scanned the empty beach, did a 180 to search the water, but I was alone. I dropped to my knees and wrote furiously with my finger. "Who are you?" Holding my breath, I waited. Then, "Look." I stared hard at the letters until a wave washed them away. Then the wall of mist vanished, and beyond the waves a woman sat on a surfboard, bobbing gently. She had shockingly white blonde hair, but was too far away for me to see any other details. "Come out," she said, and strangely, I could hear her as if she were standing right next to me. Was she delusional? No way was I going to dive under those waves and swim up to some stranger who could write in the sand like a ghost. "You must hurry. We only have minutes," she said. "Why don't you come to the shore? The time rope won't reach that far."
Time rope?
"I've had enough demons after my head," I plopped onto the sand. "So whatever you want to tell me, you can do it from there." She waded closer. Then something jerked her back. She took a frustrated breath. "Your father sent me." Okay, she had my attention now. I jumped to my feet. "You know my father?"
"Shh. You want them to hear you?"
I looked around. There was no one else here, unless you counted the seagull and the surfer guys still in the parking lot.
"Them?"
"Time is of the essence, and the longer you stand on that shore, the less time I have to help you in your quest." I inched toward the water suspiciously. "How do I know you won't drown me?"
"Because your father would demolish me if I touched the hair on your head."
I probably should have walked away, but I was curious. Maybe she could tell me who my father was once and for all. Maybe he really had sent her. I hadn't forgotten the distant image of the guy on the pyramid and how he tried to stop me from making a deal with Apuch. But since then, MIA. Carefully, I waded in. The first wave knocked me over.
"Dive under," she instructed, "or you'll never get past the breakers."
As the next wave rolled toward me, I dove beneath. The water was icy and dark. The salt burned my eyes and made my skin itch, and my heart raced unevenly, like a skipping stone. I came up for air just as another wave was forming. I dove again. Finally, I was past the waves, and I swam through the rippling water to where the woman waited, bobbing on her shiny black surfboard. I treaded water, keeping enough distance to vamoose if I had to.
"Hello, Zane," she said.
Okay, so not only did she have white blonde hair with caramel brown streaks, it was knotted into dreadlocks and looked like she hadn't washed it in a century. She wore a tattered leopard skin cape. It had a hood that hung to the side. Her mouth was turned up like she was on the verge of a smile, and her ears were pointed. But instead of being where they were supposed to be, they stuck out the top of her head like a cat's. And her eyes? They burned green and aqua blue, constantly changing like a turning kaleidoscope. I told myself to take a deep breath as I floated in the water, to be calm. So what if a surfer cat lady wanted to talk to me? Oh God, what if she worked for Ishtab? What if she was Ishtab? I remember the image of Ishtab in my book, always with a rope around her neck. This woman was clutching a gold rope, its end trailing into the dark waters as if it was connected to an anchor. I swept my arms forward, trying to distance myself, but the tide was like a magnet pulling me closer and closer. Okay, so this was a really bad idea. And just like that, the tide stopped and the waves froze in mid-crash. The air went still. It was as if the whole world had stopped spinning. The cat surfer ran her hands through the sea, and a silver bodyboard appeared.
"Join me before you drown, quickly."
So she didn't want to plunge me into the depths of the Pacific. I needed the rest, so I cradled the board and brought myself to a straddled sitting position.
"You got a wetsuit I could borrow?"
I shivered. She looked around nervously. Fine. No magic wetsuit was going to appear. I supposed I should have been grateful for the bodyboard.
"Who are you?
I asked, my teeth chattering.
"Please, please, please don't say Ishtab," I prayed.
"I am the goddess of time. For now you may call me Pacific," she said, arching a perfect brow. I didn't remember ever reading about any such goddess.
"How come I've never heard of you?"
Pacific's gaze intensified. I was erased. From the glyphs, my people's stories, as if I never existed. I was one of the most powerful of the gods, she said with a huff. The great sky watcher. I taught the people to read the stars, to plant their harvest at the appointed time, to prepare for the seasons. But then I made a grave mistake. She narrowed her eyes. I told of a prophecy the gods didn't want to hear.
Prophecy?
My voice hitched in my throat.
I have many names, Zane. I am the Great Fate, the soothsayer who foretold of a boy who would be born unlike any we'd ever seen.
I gave her a blank stare. Holy crap. She was the soothsayer. My blood started to warm up.
You're Miss Cab's great ancestor. Not by blood, of course, but by secret. But that doesn't matter now. What matters is that you're a
halfer. I know.
Half?
She blinked slowly, like she was trying to understand what the word meant. I tried again. You know, like a hybrid, a mix? Crossbreed? Pacific scooped a handful of the sea into her hand.
The gods do not measure in human terms. You may be half, or more than half.
Half is plenty, thanks.
She sighed. My prophecy frightened the gods because it brought to mind the hero twins, the very first godborns. Their mother was Shakik,
spelled I-X-K-I-K. I had to look it up.
She was from the underworld, Pacific said, and some say she was part human.
Right, the one who fell for the skull.
Wait, did she say godborns? I hadn't heard that term before.
Pacific swept a piece of knotted blonde hair from her pale face.
The twins inspired jealousy in the gods, she continued. So the gods established a law that never again would such creatures be born. And the punishment for any god who disobeyed?
That of boiling acid? I guessed.
A long and torturous death, she said with a scowl. Seeing their fear, I knew I could never reveal that not only would you be descended from a god, but you were also the one destined to release Apuch, the very god they had imprisoned. Their rage would have shaken the stars from the sky.
Okay, so my dad was a criminal, sort of. He must have heard about the prophecy, and yet it hadn't stopped him from falling in love with my mom. Talk about hard-headed.
Then I had another thought. Hang on. So how does Miss Cab know? I shared the prophecy with another seer from the bravest lineage, a lineage I could trust. I asked that she preserve its truth for generations, so when the time came for the prophecy to be fulfilled, Apuch could be stopped and your true identity kept a secret. But even she didn't know that you were to be a godborn.
So that's how Miss Cab had gotten the gig. I put the events in order. Godborn twins, imprisoned god of death, jealous other gods, dangerous secret. That's where I came in. Ugh. She blinked her cat eyes, shifting her gaze to the dark waters.
I only told the gods an innocent would be the one to release Apuch, she went on. I left out the part that he would be godborn. And you know what the gods did then? They used a powerful magic to ensure that only a god could release Apuch.
So Brooks's guess was right. They thought they made the Stinking One's prison foolproof, I said. But then I came along, the innocent fool.
Pacific laughed lightly. The gods were the fools. They thought they could bypass my sight?
She shook her head.
They never put the pieces together.
Okay. And what about my dad? Why would he risk torture by getting together with my mom? I didn't want to think any more about that. And you said you know him?
We have been friends since the beginning. He was the only one who helped me when the gods erased me from memory. She spoke quickly. I was to be executed, but your father volunteered to do it himself. Instead, he brought me here, to live beneath the ocean where Kukumats hides me. I owe him.
Kukumats? Isn't he the feathered serpent?
God of the Sea?
Also known as Kukul Khan.
Great. So my dad and Kukumats, a.k.a. God of Coolness, and Pacific, were keeping the biggest secret of all time from the other gods. My side cramped. Why didn't my dad come to tell me all this himself? Why'd he send you?
Pacific frowned. And bring the gods to you? That wouldn't be very strategic, would it?
My head was about to explode.
So who is he?
Only he can reveal himself to you. Naturally. My heart banged against my chest like a wild beast trying to break free.
Then why hasn't he?
Pacific pulled her hood over her head, tucking her hair beneath.
The gods would kill him if he were to claim you. They would know he was the one who had broken the sacred oath. Don't you see?
I felt sick. My heart, my stomach, my head, they pulsed with an anger that shook me to my core. So my dad didn't want to claim me because he was worried about saving his own butt? As if she could read my mind, Pacific leaned forward and whispered,
If the gods were to find out who you are, they would kill you too. Your father is trying to protect you.
Or protect himself. I didn't know what was worse, being marked by the gods or having my dad abandon me on purpose. So what am I supposed to do? Hide out for the rest of my life?
Yes.
She was definitely delusional. Thanks, but no thanks. I don't care about the gods. I'm not hiding.
Pacific sighed. Stubborn, like your father.
I realized Pacific had a lot of information that could help me, and I wasn't about to let my dad, did I even have to call him that anymore, get in the way of my quest.
You said you control time?
I asked.
Because that would be awesome and totally help me crush Apooch.
I am the keeper of time, but no longer the controller of it. Just as I keep but cannot control fate. And now my powers have been reduced. Using them too much will draw attention to me, and the gods would know I live.
What do you mean, reduced?
I kicked my legs under the water to try to stay warm.
You said you were one of the most powerful.
Gripping the rope tighter, Pacific said,
When the gods stole the life from the stories that made me real, they took much of my power.
Jeez, these gods seem like the biggest jerks on the planet.
Yeah, you heard that right. Jerks with a capital J.
Pacific's eyes burned with a fierceness that made me hope I was never on her bad side.
Wait a second, I said as an idea formed. You said the gods don't know about me being a hybrid. I mean, godborn.
Whatever.
But you do. And my dad does. And two of the worst ones ever know about me too, Ishtab and Apooch.
I knew that. When it comes to a secret, the more people who know about it, the more likely the secret isn't a secret anymore.
What if they tell the others?
Pacific let out a light laugh that almost sounded like a purr.
Your father and I have protected this information for ages. We are not about to reveal it. As for Ishtab and Apooch, yes, they do pose a problem. But let's hope they are too busy waging their own wars.
Was she kidding? That was a pretty big hope.
Zane, your father, Pacific said. He asked me to give you something.
Why would I want anything from him? He won't even tell me who he is. Pacific drew closer, and as she did, a huge spotted cat at least 4 times the normal size stepped out of her body like some kind of feline ghost. I nearly flipped off my board as the fierce cat, a leopard, stalked across the water like it was a solid surface and stopped right in front of me, blinking its golden eyes.
Zane, Pacific said sternly, you must focus before they find us. Now listen, I know about your quest to defeat the great Apooch. So does your father, and he isn't happy about it.
Yeah, well, he gave up his right to an opinion when he decided to leave me in the dark.
Wait a sec, how'd she know?
She must have seen the question forming, because she said, I'm time. I can see past, present, and future. The continuum runs through me still. They couldn't take that away.
Does that mean you can see my future? A tight lump formed in my throat. Did she know whether I was going to defeat Apooch or end up a miserable soldier of death, shoveling souls for the rest of my existence?
Once, I might have been able to. But now?
Her voice trailed off. Then she sat straighter and said,
There are choices that affect circumstances. One choice can lead to victory, the other to defeat. Today, I fulfilled my debt to your father.
I suddenly felt like I was standing at the bottom of the volcano, waiting for an avalanche of rocks to bury me.
Time is unraveling, Zane.
Pacific's eyes searched the skies, then found mine again.
You will need great courage to defeat Apooch. More courage than you can imagine.
I took down demon runners.
Didn't that count for something? Not that kind of courage. Something more.
I scanned the shore, trying to find Hondo's truck. When I was little and he was first teaching me about wrestling, he used to say that the real heroes didn't always win the match, but they always had courage, even when defeat was staring them in the face. Something growled beneath the ocean. Foamy bubbles floated to the surface. I gripped my board.
What was that?
I can't hold the time rope much longer, Pacific said, with a note of panic that made me wish I was on solid ground.
It's time, Zane.
The ocean began to churn again. Pacific narrowed her eyes. Then the leopard drew so close to her, I thought it would vanish back into her body. Gently, Pacific reached into its mouth while petting its head softly, like I used to do with Rosie. She carefully removed a sharp incisor, as if only thread connected it to the jungle cat's mouth.
This is Jaguar Jade, the oldest magic in the universe. It will help you, she said, handing it to me.
The tooth was about 4 inches long, bigger than what I expected, and it had a razor-sharp tip. As I turned it over in my hand, the tooth turned a deep green and pulsed with a strange warmth. I didn't get it. What good was a jade tooth when I was up against the god of death? Was I supposed to stab him in the eye with it? This is what he wanted you to give me? My throat closed up as I turned the tooth, examining it. It didn't look very magical. Pacific's gaze fell to my wrist, to Apooch's mark. She let out a small gasp.
I see.
I looked down at the stupid symbol, rubbing it in the water like I could wash it off.
Things are graver than...
Pacific began. She took a deep breath, straightened her hood, and said,
You must promise not to tell a soul about me.
Her powerful gaze made me think she could see right into my mind. Then her eyes went wide. The rope she was holding jerked her beneath the water. The jaguar vanished, and the sea tumbled violently. Waves crashed. It was like someone had started the earth spinning again, but gave it one too many whirls. As I began to paddle toward the shore, an enormous wave formed behind me, swelling bigger and bigger until it looked 10 stories tall. Pacific's voice echoed across the ocean.
When I tell you to kick, you must do so with all your strength.
I watched with fear as that wave grew. At the crest, it bulged, and I knew it was going to break any second and take me with it.
Now, Stormrunner, now!
I paddled and kicked like a madman, trying to keep up with the monster wave. As it broke, I rocketed forward, then plunged underneath. I was pitched and thrown from side to side, top to bottom, spinning so violently I didn't know which way was up. Something pressed into my back and with great force thrust me through the water at unimaginable speed. My lungs felt like they might collapse any second. Just as I was about to break the surface, I turned and saw the jaguar's face looming in the dark sea. The next thing I knew, I was on the beach,
choking and spitting up salt water. My body shook uncontrollably as I rolled over into a pile of slimy seaweed. I sat up, chest heaving, and looked all around me, but the jade tooth was gone. I must have dropped it. I scrambled to my knees and started digging, like it might be buried in the sand. But it was nowhere to be found. Panic clutched my throat, and I couldn't breathe. At the same moment, a gentle wave came in and touched my feet. I turned to see something pale green wash onto the sand. I snatched it up, and my heart pounded with relief as I stared down at the thing. "What are you?" I whispered. Wait a second. Had she called me Stormrunner? I traced the jade's smooth edges, and something stirred in me. The tooth might have looked like a cold hunk of nothing, but it was something. Something that mattered. Chapter 20. I hauled myself into the passenger seat of the truck. Hondo gave me a once-over and shook his head. "You've got a piece of seaweed in your hair." I picked it out and glanced at Brooks. She was in the back seat studying the gateway map and pretty much avoiding eye contact with me. What was up with her? I couldn't wait to get her alone so we could talk, if she'd talk to me. I need to change my clothes. I reached behind the seat for my backpack. Can you turn around? I asked Brooks. She rolled her eyes, then lifted the map so it covered her face completely. I peeled off my sea-drenched jeans and t-shirt, yanked on fresh clothes, and transferred the jade tooth to my dry pants pocket. I tossed the wet stuff through the cab's back window so it could air out in the bed. I still felt chilled to the bone, so I pulled on my gray sweatshirt. I figured I had the worst luck in the universe. It was one thing to have a bum leg. It was another to be the unfortunate chump who had freed the god of death. And to have to hide to avoid being on the god's most wanted list? Yeah, that was pretty awful, too. But there was something even more terrible than any of that. Being the living proof that someone had broken the sacred oath. It was too many shades of depressing and made me feel more different and alone than I ever had. "So, Capitan," Hondo slipped on a pair of Ray-Bans as the morning sun began to peek out of the clouds. "Where do we go once we're in Venice?" Brooks didn't lower the map. "It's on the beach." "They live on the beach?" I asked. "Sort of," she said. "You'll see when we get there." Her voice was tired, and she looked pale and drained. I wanted to talk to her to find out if I could help. Maybe, if we put our heads together, we could figure out why she couldn't shapeshift anymore. I also wanted to fill her in about Pacific and the Jaguar Jade, except Pacific had made me promise not to tell anyone about her. I leaned back, folding my arms tightly over my chest. Why wouldn't Brooks open up to me? What was her deal with Ishtab, anyway? Why the heck would the new landlord of Shibalba send demons after Brooks? She must have been in some pretty big trouble, but what kind? Then, another possibility struck me, making me feel sick. Was Brooks a double agent of some sort, playing both sides? Could I trust her not to blab the truth about me being a godborn? Too many people knew about it already. Stupid secrets. They're life ruiners. Hondo turned up some punk rock music so loud my teeth rattled in my head. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see Brooks gazing out the window with a faraway look that worried me. Whatever Brooks was wanted for, it couldn't be half as bad as being wanted for breaking the god of death, darkness, and destruction out of prison. We cruised up the coast on Highway 101 while Hondo jammed to his tunes. He sang along to some song about final chances and all or nothing. If there were a god of punk rock, he'd definitely listen to the station. Venice Beach felt like a tightly packed box. Cars were bumper to bumper on Venice Boulevard, and drivers honked like somehow that would make the traffic move faster. The place was buzzing. Apartments, houses, and stores were crammed together with only narrow alleys to separate them. Telephone poles and palm trees lined the street. We passed a dilapidated building with a mural on it of a blonde girl in roller skates with a thought cloud that read, "History is myth." "It will be soon, if the twins don't help me," I thought. Crowds strolled casually down the road, people in flip-flops, cut-off shorts, and bikini tops. Some of the guys were shirtless, even. Maybe that was a thing in California, but where I was from, no chance. As we passed narrow streets, I caught glimpses of bridges arching over water canals. I'd seen pictures of the real Venice. This place was simply a newer, smaller version. The canals disappeared into a tangle of shadowed alleys, and it felt like even this place had secrets. "Take a right on Pacific," Brooke said. My muscles tensed just hearing the name come out of her mouth. She went back to studying the gateway map. What was she looking for? "Any gateways nearby?" I asked. She folded up the map and put it in her backpack. "None." Hondo let out a low whistle. "Before this is all done, I better get to travel through one of those gateways." Before this was all over, I just wanted to make sure the world wasn't destroyed. I didn't have a plan for after the twins. I was hoping that whatever they told us would help us figure out our next steps. I didn't care what Brooks said about them being selfish, obnoxious jerks, or kings of their own magic mafia. I wasn't leaving here without their secret to defeating Apooch. With only a couple of days left, we were running out of time. Then, a terrible thought grabbed hold of me. What if Apooch has already found them? "He hasn't," Brooks said. "How do you know?" "You'll never find parking close enough," Brooks said to Hondo. "So park over there." She pointed to a public lot. Then she said to me, "Because they're really good hiders. They have the best magic guarding them. No one gets in or out unless they want them to." That reminded me of the Jaguar Jade, the oldest magic in the universe, Pacific had said. What did that mean? And how was it supposed to help me if I didn't even know how to use it? Maybe it was a conjuring stone. I tested it by clutching it in my fist while wishing for a stuffed sopaipilla for breakfast. I shut my eyes and held out my other hand expectantly, but nothing happened. No warm, doughy yumminess for me. A minute later, we crossed a congested boulevard, then weaved down an alley lined with trash cans before emerging onto the boardwalk. I had to stop and really take it all in. The breeze smelled like salt and old books, and there were maniac skateboarders, shirtless, zooming by, people on bikes and skates pulling their dogs along on leashes, and a row of vendors selling things, wooden flutes, T-shirts, throwback movie posters. Hondo wanted a Scarface poster, but didn't want to pony up the $20 for it. A rainbow-wigged juggler entertained onlookers, while an acrobatic breakdancer competed for his own crowd. A few paces ahead, there was a tarot card reader with dreadlocks, strumming a sad blues song on his guitar. He sang in a deep, low voice, "The prophecy days are a-comin'. Oh, they are a-comin'. Find the shadows and hide, for the days are a-comin'." I tried not to look at him, because I knew the second I did, he'd wave me over and try to get me to buy a glimpse of my future. No thanks. Brooks planted her palm on her forehead. "Ugh, I forgot our backpacks in the truck. Wait here." She grabbed the keys from Hondo and took off. Hondo saw it as a sign that he needed to go back to try and renegotiate for that Scarface poster. So there I was, only a few feet away from the blues-singing, dreadlock-sporting tarot card reader. I told myself to stay put and look busy. I stuffed my hands in my pockets, whistled a few notes of Frosty the Snowman. I had Christmas on my mind because maybe I was never going to have another one, okay? And craned my neck to the sky. But it was as if the guy's song had long arms to grab me. My feet wandered over and stopped right in front of his chalkboard that read, $5 minutes for $5. He wore silver-rimmed shades, and when I stopped, he smiled, showing off twinkling gold front teeth. "I have your future in my pocket," he said. His accent was thick and strange. That's okay. I didn't have any money, and even if I did, I was pretty sick of prophecies and doomed futures. The man's bronze skin shone in the sunlight.
You are a boy of many troubles. I know where you're headed.
As I started to walk away, he said, The prophecy is coming. Yeah, I thought. It already came. He smiled again and pulled up his sunglasses so I could see his dark eyes. His eyebrows looked like they'd been burned off, leaving behind small scars.
That was only the beginning, he said. The prophecy of fire. But fire spreads until it burns everything in its path.
It had to be a coincidence. How could he possibly know? A faraway drum sounded. The waves crashed. Or was that my stomach acid? Brooks came up, handed me my backpack, and grabbed me by the arm.
What are you doing?
She threw a quick glance in the guy's direction, then said to me,
Come on.
The man pulled his sunglasses over his eyes and began strumming his guitar, singing,
There are liars in our midst, and the storm is a-coming.
What was that about? Brooks asked.
What do you mean? Brooks stopped and turned to me, clutching her backpack. The amber flecks in her eyes burned bright, even in the shade. I decided they were definitely the eyes of a hawk, and that gave me a strange kind of hope that her shape-shifting ability wasn't gone forever. She tilted her head and studied me.
What did he tell you?
He knew about the prophecy of fire, Brooks.
How?
Brooks looked shaken. She opened her mouth to speak, but nothing came out. I looked over my shoulder.
He said a storm was coming. Maybe I should pay him to read my future.
No! Brooks shouted. Then she took me by the shoulders and made me look into her eyes.
You make your future, Zane. Got it? All these other things? Distractions. Now come on. You have to stay focused.
But what if he can help us? Hondo ran to catch up. He was holding a rolled poster. What's all the arguing about?
We weren't arguing, I said, clenching my jaw.
Yes, we were, Brooks said, as we continued walking.
Hondo gave me a sorry dude but you were totally arguing look. It was pretty awful when you saw and heard things other people didn't. Maybe being part God had fried my brain, and I was officially deranged. Or it could have been some more shadow magic to distract me. Or that guy was just my imagination at work. Oh, God. Maybe Pacific hadn't been real either. I reached into my pocket. Relief spread through me as my fingers found the jade still there. As we hurried down the boardwalk, I kept wondering why my dad would want to give me a jaguar tooth, of all things. Why not something useful, like a sword or poison-tipped daggers? Heck, why not help me bring down Apuch himself? If my mom had his kind of powers, she'd take on the whole world to save me. I wondered if she was worried about us. Maybe I should try to call her. Bad idea. She might wig out and force us to come home. Then a brilliant idea struck me. I could ask Ms. Cab about her the next time the chicken appeared in one of my dreams. We made our way past more booths, vendors, and street artists. Hondo nearly collapsed when he saw Muscle Beach, a whole gym right there on the boardwalk with huge dudes pumping iron in the sun. He stopped in front of the bright blue railing and smiled like a little kid.
This is awesome!
But Brooks urged us on, saying she just wanted to get this over with. Halfway down the boardwalk, Brooks led us into a store called Jazz E. There were rows of colorful bikes with a few scooters and longboards mixed in. Dozens of surfboards lined the walls. Toward the back of the shop was a little corner filled with postcards, shells, and other trinkets. The walls were painted gold and pink, and the place smelled like the cotton candy booth at the state fair.
Are we renting a bike? Hondo asked.
Brooks shook her head and went up to the cashier at the back of the store. His face was planted in one of those tabloid magazines, but I could see he was huge. Even sitting, I guessed he was at least 8 feet tall. He wore an eye patch, a silver hoop in one ear, and a plaid vest with gold buttons. He looked more like a pro-wrestling fashion pirate than a store clerk.
"It's a fine day for blood," Brooks said.
"Blood for the gods,"
the giant said without looking up.
"Blood for the gods," Brooks repeated.
Finally, he raised his eyes. A huge smile spread across his clean-shaven face.
"Little hawk,"
his voice boomed. He rounded the counter and scooped Brooks into his arms.
"I thought I might never see you again."
Standing up, the guy looked even weirder. He wore torn jeans and flip-flops the size of doormats. At least he had a shirt on under his vest.
"Hey, Jazz."
Brooks relaxed into his hug and smiled. When he set her down, her cheeks were flushed.
"Don't tell me you're back," he said, lifting one brow. "Surprised you got by the gatekeeper without me getting a phone call," Jazz said. "The guy's slacking."
"Gatekeeper?" I asked. That was the first time Jazz noticed me. Yeah, he was big and burly and sported more than a few tattoos on his arms, but the guy was like a jolly giant. He couldn't stop smiling, except when he looked at me. Then the smile disappeared like mist.
"Who's this?"
he asked. "I'm Zane," I said, trying to sound cool, or at least not like a big chicken. But seriously, this guy could have smashed me under one flip-flop if he'd wanted to. "We're friends," Brooke said. "And this is Hondo. He's a wrestling champ," she added, like he had just won a trophy yesterday. Hondo tried to make himself a few inches taller by standing on tiptoe when he shook the big cashier's hand, and his voice went a few notches deeper.
"Good to meet you, man."
"This is Jazz, descendant of the great Maya giants," Brooks said.
"Jazz E," the giant corrected. "And no, I didn't steal my name from Jay-Z. More like the other way around. But you can call me Jazz. Just don't confuse me with Tipak Na," he insisted. "That hombre was an arrogant, wicked giant, giving us all a bad name. I come from much better stock."
Whoa, I was in the presence of a real live giant. But how did Brooks know him? Was he some long-lost relative? A friend of the family's?
Jazz's gray eye crinkled around the edges when he looked at Brooks.
"Any amigos of Little Hawks are..."
He hesitated, then laughed.
"Ha! Kidding. I don't keep amigos."
Then to Brooks,
"What brings you back here? I know you don't need a surfboard."
Brooks glanced around the shop.
"I need to see them. Jordan and Bird." "Who were they?" I wondered.
Jazz crossed his boulder-sized arms over his chest.
"After what they did?"
"Jazz," Brooks's voice trembled. "My friends, they need to talk to the twins. And you know, the only way they might help..."
"Is to trade magic or play their game."
Jazz nodded gravely, like we were asking him to supply us with daggers for hand-to-hand combat.
"We don't have any magic to trade. And what do you mean, game?" I asked.
Brooks hadn't said anything about a game before this.
"Like Monopoly?"
I guessed. "Or maybe Scrabble. I was a champ at Scrabble. Or maybe he meant mind games." I got a terrible sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach. Hondo, on the other hand, was beaming, practically salivating at the idea of competition. Jazz rubbed his chin as he went back behind the counter, mumbling something under his breath. He tapped some buttons on the cash register, then pulled out two quarter-sized black stones. They were round, flat, and shiny.
"What's this?" Hondo said, taking one from the giant.
"Our key to see the twins," Brooks said.
"Made from ancient obsidian," Jazz added. "Magician stone."
"Looks like volcanic glass," I muttered, taking the other. I'd seen it once in a museum, and I used to search the beast for any traces of it, but I'd never found any.
Jazz closed the register and eyed me.
"This kid's smart. Where'd you find him?"
Brooks said, "It's kind of a long story."
"Wouldn't have to do with..."
Brooks cut Jazz off with an icy glare, and I wondered what she was afraid of him saying. She adjusted her pack.
So, Jazz, any trouble around here?
He leaned forward, raising a brow.
What kind of trouble?
You know, creepy demons, angry gods, that sort of thing, I said.
The kind that ride motorcycles, Hondo added.
I watched Jazz carefully. There was something about him, the way his face twitched and his eyes shifted. It looked like he was uncomfortable in his own skin, like he was wearing a mask.
Well, Jazz said, if we're talking about Loser of the Underworld, no. We haven't seen him. Word on the street is he's out for revenge. All sorts of theories are flying around. He's aligning with his brothers, searching for his underlords, looking to free every enemy of the gods. No one knows for sure, but we've got eyes everywhere. The whole boardwalk is filled with our guys, jugglers, acrobats.
They work for you? Hondo asked.
Every vendor out there works for the twins, Jazz said.
But, Hondo began.
I know, Jazz said. We're meant to look like regular humans. Can't wear a sign around our necks now, can we?
So the tarot reader was a gatekeeper. I wondered how many other people I'd met were part of this Maya mayhem, hiding in plain sight. You need to protect more than the boardwalk, Brooks said to Jazz. He nodded.
We've got them posted at each of the cosmic roads, too.
I was about to ask what the heck a cosmic road was when Brooks explained. Magic roads the gods travel. That wasn't in my book.
Don't worry, little hawk, Jazz said. We used extra magic to guard the place. The twins even shut down their lair, moved uptown.
What do you mean, moved? Brooks said. They've been here for, like, ever.
Security's orders. But their new crib? Man, it's incredible. The view, he sighed.
How far is it? I asked. I mean, what if they'd relocated to Nebraska? But Jazz didn't answer. He merely shook his head, then pounded his fist into his palm.
Believe me, when I catch the idiot bonehead who let our pooch out, I'm going to send him spinning into the center of the Milky Way.
My heart skipped a beat. Yeah, I muttered. Bonehead. Great. Not only would the gods be after me when they found out I was a godborn, but pretty much everyone would want me dead once they found out I was the bonehead who had freed Apooch. Hondo cleared his throat. Maybe the bonehead had a good reason.
Like what?
Jazz's face went stone still. Like maybe it was an accident, Hondo said. Or maybe one of his demon runner things let him out.
That's a lot of maybes. What did you say your name was? Hondo?
Jazz opened his mouth and tilted a can of Red Bull over it. Once the can was empty, he collapsed it with one hand.
Only problem is, the gods put him away, so a god had to let him out. And no god would break the sacred oath. So that tells me there are some dark secrets swirling around. And wherever there are secrets, there's a teller. Give it time. Someone's going to squeal.
My knees felt weak, and for the first time, I had a terrible sense I was leading Hondo and Brooks off the edge of a high cliff. So all the gods know? Brooks said, twisting her mouth. Man, news sure traveled fast, I thought.
Yep, Jazz said. But now they're pointing fingers, fighting among themselves.
He tossed his crushed can into a trash can.
All the seers went dark.
He spoke to Brooks as if Hondo and I weren't even there.
This is serious, little hawk. Very serious.
I stuffed my hands in my pockets and gripped the jade. So then, why don't the gods come up with a way to recapture Apooch?
Can't find them, kid. Even if they could, it would start a huge war. Alliances would crack, deals would be struck, and we'd all end up dead anyway.
Then, with a shrug, he added,
I guess we've had peace for too long.